Shalom Aleichem, everyone. On behalf of the National Council of Engizel, we welcome our Rabbanim, and certainly Rabbi Willig Shlita, who is now we're up to our 13th call, our 13th conference call. And with that, without further ado, Rabbi Willig.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Hammer. Question number one. My wife and I are acquainted with a woman in the neighborhood who mentioned in the past that her father's mother was Jewish. They were a Kira-friendly shul, and she heard about our communal Seder and wanted to RSVP for herself and her 12-year-old son, who was expressing interest in his heritage. At that time, we were able to push her off due to the late reservation. Now she wants to meet with me to discuss his, quote, Judaism. A. Would it have been mutter to let him attend the Seder? Is the Seder worse than other Yom Tov events? Answer. A Seder is no better or no worse than other Yom Tov events. We have a general principle that we're not supposed to be mazmin and nochri for Yom Tov. It's a gzera shema Yivashal Yarbe Bishvilo, and that seems to be a very significant obstacle in this particular situation. So on the normal conditions, the answer to this question would be it's not mutter, not for a Seder, nor for any other event. On Shabbos, by contrast, it would be okay. B. Can I steer him to internet sites of general Jewish knowledge such as H.com, Torah.org, Chabad.org, or is that under the Easter of teaching a non-Jew Torah? I think it's permissible. There's no violation of Lifnei Iver, Losita, and Michshol because the non-Jew can easily learn by himself. You are not teaching him anything directly, and there's no Easter of Messiah with respect to a Nachri, to a Paschal Halacha. So it's permissible to give him this internet site. C. There's a conservative school in a nearby neighborhood. Can I recommend the institution without expressing my concerns to their headmaster? Am I allowed to even make such a recommendation to this child's parents? This is a very serious question. I believe the proper answer is Sheva al Tasa Odif. Don't recommend anything. Don't say anything. If he discovers it on his own, so he'll go if he wants. And if he won't, he won't. You shouldn't recommend it. D. Can I allow him to come to programming we run for Jewish kids? It would help us create the minimum critical mass to allow us to open the program for Jewish kids. The parentheses explains why it's a Shas HaTchak, why it's a pressing need to allow him to come, and if it's a pressing need, perhaps it should be permissible on those grounds, even though the programming is for Jewish kids, and he's technically not Jewish, halachically he's not Jewish, but he's interested in Jewish heritage, so on the normal condition, I would say, should not allow him, but b'shas hatzchak, that's what's necessary to allow the entire program to be over for Jewish kids, and it can't do without him, then there's room to be lenient in this particular circumstance. Question two, is it mutter to set up an intercom to be continuously on over Shabbos for an older woman who will be staying alone in the basement? This is a new one for me. I've received this call many times with respect to little children. Many ask, will they have a little child? They want to have an intercom for a little baby. And I thought the answer was no, because we never had it in the past. It didn't exist. Babies survived without them. There's no real need for them under normal circumstances. You won't hear the baby crying, so you won't hear him crying. So you'll hear the baby a little bit later. That's how we lived for all the years, and I don't think it should be reason to change it. Now, there is a halachic problem with leaving it on all Yom Tov, all Shabbos, because individuals, aside from the baby, walk into the room and they make noise. It's picked up by the monitor, the intercom. So ideally, it shouldn't be done in the case of a little baby, nor should it be done in the case of an older woman who is staying alone. Of course, there could be special circumstances. I'm not denying that. But generally speaking, an older woman, assuming that she's in reasonable health, she's not being attended to by full-time nursing staff, things of this nature, then if she's not sick enough to require a nurse, she obviously, the nurse is there, you don't need an intercom, then she's probably not sick enough to warrant putting on the intercom under normal conditions. There could be an exception, both with respect to a baby and with respect to an older person, but that would have to be established. Generally speaking, the answer is no. Three, what should be the parameters of when to correct the pronunciation, mumbling, or missing words of the chazan for the haftorah or during davening proper? Now, haftorah is a very interesting question. It says in Poskim that if there is a haftorah being read from a printed chumash, which is done in most shuls, every individual is required to read the haftorah by himself, many of us are familiar with Shtiblach, where the person getting mafter says the brachos out loud, and then it's just quiet. Everyone reads the mafter, the haftorah separately. The Baal mafter just reads it along quietly as everybody else does, and says the brachos out loud at the end. Now, that's not right. Obviously, the chatchila, we should have it read properly by someone who knows how to get every single word correct in a loud voice, without mumbling, and without missing, and without incorrect pronunciation. Nonetheless, despite that lechatchila, there is a minig in Klal Yisrael to honor people to read the get mafted and read after from printed chumash, even though you know in advance it's probably not going to get everything right. That's our minig. And after the fact, when he makes a mistake, that in the equivalent case, if he made that mistake in Kriyas HaTorah, we would correct him and tell him to go back. But with Naftorah, we don't correct him, because, again, everyone's supposed to read it by himself. Now, there are those who yell out corrections during the Haftorah as well, especially if they're egregious mistakes. But over here, we're talking about mumbling, pronunciation. Missing words, of course, is the most serious of the three. People may yell out on their own to correct him if he misses a word. But if he doesn't hear and he ignores him, so in the Sefer Torah, you have to go bang the table till he goes back. But in the Haftorah, we are more lenient. And therefore, there is not so necessary to correct these mistakes of pronunciation, mumbling, or missing words, even though, you know, ideally you should correct to get a perfect reading, and missing words are the most serious of the three. Mumbling is an unfortunate phenomenon in many circles. Pronunciation depends how bad the mistake is. But again, we should, even if we correct it and he doesn't listen, he just keeps right on going, which often happens in Haftorah. I don't think you have to make a scene out of it. So too with davening. Davening itself, these days, the shliach tzibur does not vote to anybody in anything. Everyone davens himself, brochas and psukah dezimra and kriyah shema v'chosel and v'shmon esrei. So you're not really being vote to anybody. And therefore, if it's some mistake is made, it's not right. It's an end of kovod tzibur. It's an end of getting the davening pronounced properly. But b'di'eved, since he's not mostly anybody else, and just, you know, can't correct every single little mistake or mumbling, he's mumbling the whole time, then there's room to be lenient. Again, it's all in the b'di'eved situation. Ideally, we should get someone who, just with respect to Haftorah, so too with respect to tefillah, the chazan should say everything clearly, without mumbling, without missing a word, and pronouncing properly. Question 4. There are websites and blogs making all kinds of alleged claims against Jewish people, including Torah educators, rabbonim, renowned lay leaders, and famous musicians and Jewish personalities. Generally speaking, considering the volume of sources quoted, the likelihood is that this site contains both true and false information by many Jewish rabbonim and figures. However, I would imagine the site owners consider this in service of a greater good, or at the very least, awareness. A, is it permitted to read or believe information on these sites? To answer A, we have to go back to Sefer Chofetz Chaim. Sefer Chofetz Chaim, Klal Vov, Sif Aleph. It's also to believe. It's called the Kabbalah Shenhara. Lahamin b'libeinu shasipu emes. Literally, believe. It's a Torah violation, as it says, Lo sisa shem hashav, based on the Gemara Pesachim, Daf Kuf Yud Ches. What about to read? That's Siv Beis. There's also the Shmoa. The Shmoa means to hear, and presumably to read is the same thing. Chofetz Chaim says it's an Issa d'Oraisa. Where'd you get it from? A Gemara in Shvua Staf Lamed Aleph. Also the Dayal the Shmoa Divrei Baldin Koran Shabo Sheyavo Baldin Chavero. Dayan can't hear one party to the Din Torah before hearing when the adversary is not there yet. What's the pasuk? Same pasuk. Lo sisa shem hashav. It's the exact same pasuk is used for both. It conveys an impression to the Sefer Chofetz Chaim, the Issa d'Oraisa as well. And what is the common denominator? Once something gets into your head, It's hard to get it out. You hear certain things, whether you're a person hearing some bad story about somebody else, or whether you are a dayan who's going to sit in judgment of two people. Once you hear one side, and it comes, your ears are exposed to it, and you hear it, it's very hard to get it out and approach it from a more neutral perspective. And if you look in the Sefer Mitzvot of the Rambam, you also say Reish Pei Aleph, you see something along those lines. There's a beautiful Sefer on the Chofetz Chaim called the Chelkas Binyamin, Rav Binyamin Cohen Shlita, son of Rav Feivel Cohen Shlita, and he writes there in Os Ches, he's not sure that it's really an Issa de Oraisa. He's not sure. Only for a dayan who's dealing with Dinim Amaris. There we find this prohibition. But let's say he wasn't appointed as a dayan yet, then perhaps it would be permissible, even if he sits later on. Or if the Din Torah is not about money, it's about bizyonis, things of this nature. So therefore, he thinks it may not be a deraisa. His second question is, the famous sin of ape tlosa, that a person, if something has been heard by three people, it's permissible for Reuven, who knows it's been heard by three people, to tell it to Shimon, unless Shimon's going to actually believe what Reuven is telling Shimon. This is in Klal Beis Siv Gimel in the Chofetz Chaim. You see from here that just the fact that he listens to it and doesn't believe it, it's likely not an Iser de Oraisa. Okay, doesn't mean it's Mutter, but he's quibbling with the fact that Chofetz Chaim says it's a Oraisa, maybe it's only the Rabbanan. And one way or the other, it's permissible to hear even the Chatchila in order to be protected. Because you don't intend to hear negative things about somebody, but rather to save yourself from damage of whatever type, or for some other, what we call toelus, the key word here is toelus, for other positive and legitimate purpose. So the Chofetz Chaim said this is only true if the person who spoke also only said it the toelus. Otherwise, if he didn't say the toelus, and I hear the toelus, I'm machshelim lifna evil ositein michshel. Of course, in our case, an additional person goes on the internet site and reads this negative information, which is found on a blog or website. So directly, he's not machshil the person who put it up. The person put it up for everyone to read. Probably taken many, many hits or downloads by the time our questioner even gets to the screen. I don't know the facts whether every single hit or download gives them more money for advertising. That may be an issue. I'm not sure the facts in any given case. But in any event, the Chofetz Chaim gives an example. Someone who's already speaking Lashon Hara, and I go to over here, there's no lifnei either. Here too. He's already spewing out this stuff to the whole world. And if I quote here, which means I'm looking at the screen, then I'm not doing anything. So there's no lifnei iver, even if the individual who is running the site has negative intentions to criticize someone without any kind of a toelis. Now, what if there's a suffix toelis? So again, the Sefer Chelkas Binyamin says it's permissible. It is a doubtful gain, even to say and certainly to listen to it. So when is it usher? Only if right now there's no need for the person to know it. Maybe in the future, it's also, you're not permitted to do it right now. So therefore, it would be prohibited if right now the person who wants to go on the internet site has nothing to gain from it. It's a very difficult answer for every individual to take in each and every case. May you read information on these sites. Now I believe it. May you read it. Well, perhaps by reading it, something will be gained or some damage will be prevented, as we shall see momentarily. What happens if you, the reader, know for a fact that the story there is true, that the facts described there are, in fact, correct facts, but you can be interpreted in one way or the other. It can be down the Kaf Tzus or down the Kaf Chova. So the Gemara says, the Shvuah Taf Lamed, I'm required to be down the Kaf Tzus, as it says, B'tzedek, Tishmor HaYisecha. What if I'm down the Kaf Chova? Not only am I in violation of B'tzedek, Tishmor HaYisecha, but also in violation of the Ether of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara. This is found in Siv Zion. Again, we're in Klal Vav of Chavetz Chaim. Siv Ches, he says, this applies to an average individual. Certainly with the Ish Yirei Shamayim, according to Rambam in Perek Alad Mishnah Vav and Pirkei Ovis, and with the questioner asked, what about Rabbonim and other types of what we call Torah educators? They seem to, if they have a reputation of being Yirei Shamayim, which I certainly hope they do, then it becomes even more serious. And it's interesting in Siftes, and on the bottom, he says, this is true not only of hearing Lashon Hara, but also if someone wrote Lashon Hara. Of course, he referred there to newspapers, so we can extend it to our internet situation. So somebody who reads it is like somebody who hears Lashon Hara. That's exactly our case. So what's to be gained? So when Sif Yudi writes, L'meicha Shmiboy, he quotes the Gemara, that if a person says something negative, I'm not permitted to believe it, but L'meicha Shmiboy, I'm permitted to fear, perhaps it might be true, and to take protective steps. For example, I want to go into business with somebody, and I hear that he's dishonest. I'm not required to go into business with him, because, I don't want to take any chances. On the other hand, it says in Sefer Chavetz Chaim, V'yeitiv imo. You have to be good to him as you were good to him until now. That means if there's no chashash, you're going to be damaged. Not talking about a business partnership. You just be good. You say hello to him. Things of this nature, you, whatever you gave him in the past, you continue to give him. But on the other hand, in the Sefer Chelkas Binyamin, Os Nun Dal, he calls the Sholom Eshiv, Chelk Alef Simen Chof, there was a Melamed, and the Melamed, there was a testimony from his students that, quote, over Avera Chamura, and this Avera Chamura could cause a hezek to his Talmidim, a serious damage, even though there's no formal edus, either they were ketanim, or wasn't officially in a bezdin, whatever the case may be. Nonetheless, they removed him from his position, and Chelkas Binyamin explains, it's not, quote, Lashon Hara B'Alma, it is a story told by serious Talmidim, describing a serious infraction, where there's much to suggest that the allegations are unfortunately correct, and unfortunately what was true in the time of the Sholem Eshiv is true in our time as well. And as he says there, V'tzorach Shikul Rav, you have to be very careful not to jump to conclusions, but at the same time we have an overriding responsibility to protect children and to protect the public. The Netziv, he quotes it in Meshav Dovah, Chelik Beis Siman Aleph, says something's wrong with the Sheikhet, there's an obligation to tell Bezdin about it, even if he's going to lose his parnasa. So same thing over here, the Malabik loses parnasa, the Rabbi loses parnasa, the case may be, you have to do what has to be done. So the Meicha Shmiboy, if a person goes on an internet site and he reads Stam Gossip, so then we're not permitted to believe it, and you can't fire someone based on gossip found on the internet. However, if an individual is in a position where this story, if confirmed, would lead to a termination, presumably by reading it, he would be placed in a better position to examine the facts independently and perhaps to receive formal testimony or the kind of informal testimony that the Sholem Eshiv described to protect future congregants or future students, as the case may be. Unfortunately, this is all too common in our time. And if a person's reading the internet with that intention, not to believe everything at face value, but to see what certain allegations are, so that if he's in a position to do something about it, he will investigate more thoroughly and halachically and carefully, then of course it would be a toelis of lemeicha shmiboya, since he can do something about it, to read things on the internet, and it would be permissible in that circumstance. One example of many. Question B, do these sites have a halachic right to exist? The answer is, if indeed it's a quote, in service of a greater good, that's called toelis, and the people who run the site have this in mind, they have kavanah l'toelis, then Chafetz Chaim and Klal Yud in Sif Dalet and a little bit in Zayim, it says that the toelis is permissible, but he adds a number of additional conditions. Number one, that you know for a fact that what you're saying is correct. That's hard to ascertain in our cases. Number two, you should think about it and don't jump to decide immediately this is in fact true and you put it out right away just to get a scoop. That wouldn't be proper. Number three, you should not exaggerate the avla which was done. Number four, you cannot achieve the same toelis without this sipur of lashon hara. And number five, he shouldn't be damaged as a result of what you're saying more than he would be rightfully damaged in a bezin when bezin be possession of all the facts. There's one more condition which likely does not apply in most cases, to give him tochacha first. But if he's not going to be a mekabel tochacha, which is likely in these kinds of cases, then it would not be necessary. So again, the people who run these sites have to ask a shayla, look themselves in the mirror, open the Chafetz Chaim, and see if they, at least in their own minds, satisfy all these criteria. C, how should I respond to my kehila if this is presented to me? You respond exactly as we just spoke, that whether they're allowed to do it depends on their intentions and other details. Whether you're allowed to believe it, the answer is no. Whether you're allowed to listen to it, or read it in this case, depends upon whether there's something you can do about it, whether it means to terminate an employee or something, or whether it means to warn others not to interact with this individual, to protect themselves, you know, as long as this suspicion at least is out there. All this would be a possibility of the toelis, but every case, of course, has to be evaluated on its own merits. This is question number four. Question number five, what a difference. They want to put out mice traps on Shabbos or Yom Tov. They saw a mouse and it's causing them distress. The Mishnah Berurah says in Siman Shin Tes Zayin, Sivkot and Yudches, that is prohibited. It's an ether of Tzeda. The Shemir Shabbos Kilchosa, Perek Chof Hei Ha'or Lamed Ches, in the new edition, refers you to the Das Torah de Marasham, who quotes the Marach Or Zeruah in Siman Mem Zayin, that says it's permissible. It's a malacha shena tzricha legufa. It's a derabbanan we paskin, and the derabbanans a mutter b'makom tzar, things of this nature. This is not really tzar. That's why most poskim, even if they agree that we hold like a shimon, ain't shikul with derabbanan, would not necessarily read the marach or the rule's conclusion. I think most people assume you may not put it out on Shabbos, put it out before Shabbos, and that's what should be done. There's a gemara that with respect to the issue of muktzah, so an achbar is included in graf sharei, and you can, the Gemara is a case, you took it by the tail and threw it away. But that's in case the trap was put out from before Shabbos. Question number six. When we moved into our shul, we made our tanai on the main shul that we would be using it for other things besides davening and learning. We used the room for kiddushin, meetings, receptions, etc. This past Purim, it rained, and the chair people had to move our Purim carnival inside. We have a large yard, but a small building. Several people were upset because they put the moonwalk, a bouncing toy for young kids, in the shul. Would this be deemed a tashmish maguna that should not be allowed in the shul, even though we do allow the kiddushim and meetings? Are there any type of activity that should not be allowed in that room? The big problem. The Shulchan Aruch in Kuf Nun Aleph Sif Yud Aleph says that tonight doesn't work. Doesn't work for achila. The word tashmish maguna, that is a relevant term there. Tashmish maguna is not allowed even b'churbano. Even if the shul is destroyed, you still may not do a tashmish maguna. But when it's b'binyano, when the shul is still around and functioning, you may not do a tashmish even if it is not maguna. So they just, the big problem, how do you justify the first example, kiddushim, meetings, receptions. It sounds like it should not be permitted even with a tanai. How does a tanai help? So the Bi'ur Halacha says in Sif Aleph of Kufnan Aleph, Dimaskel the Ain, that maybe they rely upon Rashi, that even be Yeshuvan, even while the shul is functioning, a tanai works, but that's a difficult sheet. That's a Das Yochit. So he says in that same Simon, Sif Yud Aleph, Dimaskel Avo, maybe they rely upon the third view. That's the Ramban. The first view is Tosfos, then it's Rashi, and Ramban. Ramban says, you know, it's muta midochak. What does midochak mean? To provide food for poor people on a temporary basis, but not what we call kalus rosh vehitl, for levity and scoffery. That would be prohibited for sure, and nothing would help. So perhaps the people who were upset considered the moonwalk to be in the category of what we call kalus rosh vehitl. Now, I don't think it's called hitl because it's made for young children and young kids, as it's called over here. They're not trying to make to scoff at anything. They're just trying to have a good time. Is it called kalus rosh since the adults are presumably not participating themselves? That's questionable. Maybe it's considered to be midokak. It started raining and there's nowhere else to go, but you know, it's hard to justify these things, but perhaps, you know, this you can squeeze in the possible heter of the combination of maybe Rashi's right, and then maybe this qualifies for the Ramban's heter. But of course, the proper way is to find another room, either build out another room, rent out another room, that the shul should remain a shul, and the other activities, eating and kiddushim and meetings and receptions should all be in a different room. That's what's ideal. Now, it's not the same as a shtibl. A shtibl is a besmedrish. It's not a shul. And so people are learning there all day, presumably. The typical shul today, no one's learning in the shul all day. And therefore, they have the besmedrish to eat. So you shouldn't have bittul Torah. It's very hard to apply certain that to a moonwalk on Purim. So that's why the heterim are somewhat weak, based on Rashi and or the Ramban. The best thing is to get an additional location for these kinds of activities. B'di'evet, a case such as this, it's arguable that maybe it's considered to be midochak, and maybe it's not called kalas rosh v'hitl. Maybe. But that certainly should be avoided going forward. Question 7. Saw brought down in the name of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch that the latter Yizkor, Yahrzeit candle for the second day of Yontif, when Yizkor is recited, and the three regalim would be inappropriate because there was no purpose for Yom Tov. Is this how we paskin? Or is the fact that one is lighting the candle for Yizkor make it a Tzorech Yom Tov? An excellent question. Most poskim say it is, in fact, prohibited. And the whole idea of a Yizkor candle is not so accepted. It's not such an ancient custom. It's a spin-off on the Yahrzeit candle. I have to believe that came first, the Yahrzeit candle. Perhaps it's a spin-off on the Yom Kippur candle, which was kept for Ner Shabbos. Whatever it spun off the Yizkor candle, it's not as accepted as the Yahrzeit candle. I know in my house, for Yahrzeit we have a candle, and for Yizkor we don't have a candle. And I'm sure there are other houses that have that custom as well. Yahrzeit, the Mishnah Berurah's Lashon, is in Reish Samach Aleph Sukkotin Tezayin. Sheha Olam Nizhorin. Became a very widespread custom to do it. He's discussing the Goy Dayat and Ben Hashmoshes. Is it a Torah Mitzvah? So here in our Simon Hilchos Yantav, Simon Tav Kuf Yudalad Sifhei, the Halacha says, some say that Ner Shel Batola is Mutter. Means even if it's no purpose whatsoever, it's still Mutter. It seems to be the Rambam Shita. That's his Pshat Mitoch, Bibshuta. So, Hotzah and Havara are muta shalol tzorach klal, and the other malachas aren't muta mishum mitoch. The Tosis is an opposite shita, that all malachas are the same, and it's only muta tzorach hayom. And this is a question whether this really is tzorach yomta, because it's not such a great need. It's not a physical need, and even the spiritual need is not so great. However, the Ksav Sofer, Simon Samachay, quoted by the Bi'ur Halacha, says, maybe no. Maybe as a Yizkor candle, it's considered to be like a Ner Shel Mitzvah because it's in honor of the father and the mother, and it's only Yom Tov Sheni, So for someone who is emotionally overwrought, he forgot to put on his Yizkor candle. I guess he has to put a 48-hour candle before Yom Tov Rishon, and he forgot to do it. So there's room to be makel based on the Ksav Sofer and other and the Rambam. But ideally, it should not be done. If you want to have it on, you should put it on from before Yom Tov Rishon. Now, there are those who keep out Yom Tov candles for completely different reasons. Nothing to do with Kibud Av Aim. But to have a candle, a light there, if you want to light another candle, to avoid the problem of Molad Eish. That, of course, should be done from before Yom Tov. Can't do it on Yom Tov proper. That has a different calculus, which I think the question does not discuss directly, so we'll put it aside. Question number 8. If the Rav's seat in the shul faces the back of the shul, which is the woman's section, which is a mechitza low enough that married women's hair can be seen, is this a problem? What are some practical tips to avoid the problem? So too for making kiddush or other brachas at events where women might have their hair uncovered, or short sleeves. Yes, it's a very great problem. It's true that the Aruch HaShulchan and Siman Ayin Hei Siv Zayin is lenient and says that nowadays, as he puts it, Bavonoseinu HaRabim, due to our many sins, that the women in his country in Lithuania did not cover their hair, and that is a fact. Whoever denies this is guilty of revisionism. Many Rabbonim's greatest, I'm not mentioning any names, the greatest of great Rabbonim in Lithuania, their wives didn't cover their hair. It's just a reality. Aruch HaShulchan didn't say it was mutter. He said that once that if that fact exists, there's no violation of Seir B'Yisha Erva anymore. The Mishnah Berurah, the Sifkot Yud, vehemently rejects that opinion. And I thought the Mishnah Berurah was a more cogent argument because there's a difference, I believe. This is my Sefer Amorach and Brachas, Siman Tazayin. There's a fundamental difference between Seir B'Yisha Erva and what we'll call Tefach B'Yisha Erva. The difference is as follows, that when it comes to Seir, we cannot say that the Seir is provocative and just seeing a woman's hair is going to lead to erotic thoughts or other such hiruim roim. Because if that would be the case, an unmarried woman should also be required to cover her hair. Rather, I believe, there was a chiyuv, which we assume, according to most poskim, was a chiyuv in a Torah, based on the Gemara of Sefer Ksuvos of Ayin Beis, Das Moshe is Daraisei, for her to cover her hair. I believe the reason for that is that we should know who's a single woman, who's a married woman at a glance. That's why I'm not a fan of the shetels that are exactly the same and cannot be distinguished from her own hair. In any event, it's a Chovas Kisui, and the Chovas Kisui creates, with the Rabbanon, a din of Seir B'Yisha Erva, as opposed to her body, you know, with the short sleeves. So the short sleeves, it's the other way around, that the because this part of the body leads men to think improper thoughts or do improper things, that's exactly why the halacha states that there's a chovas kisur, that must be covered. So it's going in two different and opposite directions. And that's why, in my opinion, as you'll assume, if you look on the Divrei Chamudos and the Kaf HaChaim, Divrei Chamudos and the Russian Brachos, I believe Perek Gimel Siman Lamed Zayin, and the Kaf HaChaim is in Siman Ayin Hey, they both seem to assume that if all the women go around in short sleeves, then there's not a problem of Tefach B'Isha Erva. The Mishnah Berurah doesn't like that either, honestly. He thinks it's Das Yehudis, Mark Subas Ayan Beis, that's Jerusalem Magulos. But if you look in Rashi there, he says Das Yudis is what the Jewish women accepted upon themselves. You get an impression that if in a particular town they don't accept it anymore, there would not be a violation. That's what I thought, that there's room to be makel with respect to sleeves, for example, as opposed to makel with respect to hair. The hair is worse because it's an objective criterion of being married. That creates a shame error, as opposed to sleeves, with the fact that they are an attraction because they're normally covered, now they're uncovered, that creates a shame erva. But if it's all the women go around in shorter sleeves in that place, perhaps it's not as big a problem. Rav Moshe, in Chelek Aleph, Siman Mem Gimel has exactly the opposite distinction from my own. He says, even according to Aruch HaShulchan, she likes that the hair is not a problem, but the arms, he says, would be a problem. Comes out according to both the Igros Moshe and according to what I said, in the cases being described where the hair is uncovered and the sleeve, the arms of someone uncovered, so according to both opinions, it would be a significant problem. What's worse, I'm very sad to say this, but what's worse is there are people who come to shul, now they don't cover their hair. Today, the women who are married, they cover their hair with some kind of covering, but there's still usually a tefach left out, which is a problem. Again, for those who don't cover it properly all the time, those just do it in shul. And very often, the sleeves are too short, etc. But what's worse than that is that the women don't even cover their bodies. The Rambam writes an expression in Hilchos Kriyashma, Perek Beis Halacha Tesayin, Kol Guf Isha Erva. At least with the tefach's worse. And I understand it to mean the torso as opposed to the extremities. And unfortunately, those who open their eyes see that women in Orthodox shoes, their necklines are such, in full view of the rabbi sitting in the front, that it creates a problem which I don't believe that the heter of the Divrei Chamuros or Kaf HaChaim, that if everyone goes around that way, there's no din of tefach b'sheva. I don't think it applies to Guf HaIsha. I think it applies only to the shok, to the droa, the extremities, not to the torso, that's my view. And that's a serious problem. Unfortunately, it's a serious, serious problem. So what do you do? The Mishnah Berurah, at the beginning of Siman Ayin Hey, says, what if you close your eyes? It's a very difficult heter. It says you shouldn't rely upon it. This is impossible otherwise. What's impossible? Just turn around. Well, not always possible to actually turn around for one of two reasons. Number one, it could cause a big bizoyan, covered abrius. And number two, the rabbi is sitting in his big chair. You can't turn it around. It's could be nailed to the ground and facing the back. There's nothing to do about it. Well, you could also turn your body a little bit. If you turn your body so you're not really facing the ladies section directly, you're facing sort of in the corner. That would be the best thing to do. Or put a high stender in your line of sight where you put your sitter so you can't really see past it. That's a mechitza. And absolutely no choice. You can close your eyes. Some say that taking off your glasses is better than closing your eyes if you can't see that far because even with your eyes open, you can't see. That's the question. When it comes to the Kiddush and Brachos question, it's more feasible to turn around because everyone's sort of standing around and not in a fixed place. Here the women are in a fixed place, and then the poor rabbi is in a fixed place facing directly to them. Not always so easy to turn around. So if you can't, you can rely in a pinch on the closing your eyes, as the Mishnah Berurah says, if you have no alternative. Better to turn yourself to the side. And of course, what would be better was if the women would come to shul properly dressed. If the rabbi can achieve that, it would be a tremendous, tremendous accomplishment. Obviously, it has to be done with great sensitivity in our times. Okay. B. If at shul or meals there are women who sing along audibly during kedusha, oleinu, or benching, what should be done? Is it better to daven or bench later? What if one is a chazna or mezame? We spoke about it two shiurim ago that there were those who are lenient when it comes to kol isha with respect to zmiros and davening, and there's room to be lenient in that situation. In addition to the fact, as we mentioned perhaps before, that there are many, many, many voices singing at once. I hope it's a big shul. You have 100 women's voices with 100 men's voices, you don't hear any voices. It's just one big sound. And there are those who are makel on the grounds of trei kol lo mishtami, which may apply in such a circumstance. So I believe it's important to daven there. You should daven in the shul, not later. Bench in the shul. Kedusha, aleinu, benching. Benching is the biggest shaila of all, but even there I believe it's... It should be, it's okay. I already mentioned to you that certain great rabbonim were alleged to have told people to sing zmiris at the table, and presumably, unless I know otherwise, it probably applied to benching too. So therefore, there's room to be lenient. But the person should have try very hard not to have any kavana to listen to the what they're called shira. They should try to focus on the davening, the benching, and the kedusha, and not focus on the voices of the women. because it could distract him. And according to some authorities, it's not just a distraction. It could even, according to some authorities, Kol Be'isha applies to Kriya Shema. We mentioned this in our last discussion. Not that anyone disagrees and says it doesn't apply elsewhere. The question is, is there a separate violation with respect to Kriya Shema, such as Kol Ishto? But here, it's Noshem Achero, so it's even more strict. In theory, a Kol Isha in the middle of Kriya Shema, or benching for that matter, shouldn't be allowed. That's what the question is. The questioner felt. Maybe you should bench or daven later. I would say that if a woman is singing a love song solo, and you want to daven a bench, you should do it later. But since she's singing Kedusha and with 100 other voices, there's room to bench and daven and say Kedusha at that time. 9. Situation where the husband does not use the Erev and the wife does. That wasn't a favor. What do I say about other chumras such as Chol of Yisrael, Chodosh, or Rabbeinu Tam's Motzei Shabbos? Is there a difference if it's a chumra that is more, quote, noticeable? We spoke about this in the last year. I thought my main objection was when the distinction is made between men and women. You know, for a woman, she can be lenient. It's against the Shulchan Aruch. Simon Shin Chav Chesif Yud Beis, he says, with respect to Hilchos Pikuach Nefesh, that should be done all your days Zucharam and not in the Kavis. Otherwise, you're afraid. The Mishnah Berurah writes, Shiakelu Hanoshim B'Mokom Acher. Okay, we're not, the Torah doesn't speak to us. We're allowed to do what our husbands are not allowed to do, what our sons are not allowed to do. That would be a very serious problem if you ask me. Aside from the fact that's going to be pointed to, you see the some of the halacha views women as second-class citizens, which of course is not true, as we've spoken about many times. But for this reason, that's my main objection. Now, if the balabas has his own private chumrah, he picked up in the yeshiva or whatever, some particular psaki received or minig tovis that he observes, but no one else in the family keeps it, that's a personal chumrah. That's no problem. There's never a problem with that. So if, for example, the house, they use regular milk, but he drinks only Chol of Yisrael, and the house is regular, but he's makbir on Chodesh, or he himself keeps 72 minutes, others don't. I don't think that's a problem at all. That's a different kind of a situation. 10, last question. I have a very special young man in my shul who has Down syndrome, probably to be considered high-functioning. He loves to daven and is very much a part of his life. He can say most of the words, but with distortion. 1, in general, at what point is one considered to be a gadol b'mitzvos? I believe that high-functioning Downs is considered a gadol with respect to mitzvahs for the following reason. If you look in Reb Shlomo Zalman Sefer Mincha Shlomo Simen Lamed Daled, he says if a person has to have a certain level of intelligence. Now, it's impossible to say that he has to have the average intelligence of a 13-year-old. If that's the case, that means that half the people aren't intelligent at age 13 or age 12 for girls. That's inconceivable. But if you go down from age 13 in the halachic universe, there's the next step down, the next cutoff point down is something which is called onas ha-pu'utos. Now, onas ha-pu'utos is a big question what that means, how old exactly must he be. But if you look on the average of the various many shitas, it would be about an 8-year-old. So for someone that's a seichel of an 8-year-old, which is onas ha-pu'utos on average, I believe he's considered to be a gadol with respect to mitzvahs. And I believe that the description over here, he loves to daven, he's high-functioning, daven's part of his life. I believe he's the intelligence of an 8-year-old. And therefore, I believe that he is a gadol b'mitzvahs. And we have to treat him as such. 2, the previous rabbi has allowed this young man to daven next to the chazan and say each word together with him out loud. This is a problem of trei koli lo mishtami. We've mentioned in the third question today that nowadays the chazan is not motzi anybody in anything. We mentioned the chatchil, ideally we should put somebody there, a chazan, that can be motzi somebody. He should be able to say every word with proper pronunciation, shouldn't skip and shouldn't mumble, ideally. it seems to me that in this particular case, one can make a counter argument. We don't want that the tzibur should be shortchanged by having a chazan who is not giving them a perfect rendition with no skipped words and no wrong pronunciations and no swallowing. That's what we want for the tzibur, to give the tzibur a greater level of inspiration, to give the tzibur an opportunity to have more kavana, as opposed to someone who's mumbling and skipping and mispronouncing. There's a chance of it more distraction and less kavana, which is, of course, not what we want. Again, because he's not sure of being moti nowadays. It seems to me, therefore, that in this particular case, one can argue to the contrary. Just imagine, I never had it in my shul, there's a chazan, and the people in the shul, very often they get distracted, and they're daydreaming, and they're thinking about other things. And all of a sudden, next to the chazan stands a young man who was obviously trying to overcome very significant developmental challenges. And in order to do so, he stands next to the chazan with mesiras nefesh, says every single word out loud. I don't know about other people, but it seems to me if I would experience that, it would elevate me to a higher level. If this young man can go through all this mesiras nefesh to daven in a less than perfect fashion in front of the tzibur, next to the chazan, to show his devotion to davening and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how can I talk about who won the sports game or to think about the stock market when this is going on right in front of me? I thought on the contrary, it would get other people to daven with more kavana, to daven more slowly. He says each word together out loud. That's what everyone should daven, each word together. Each word, you know, out loud is separately without mumbling and skipping and mispronouncing. It seems to me that to the contrary, by watching what's going on in the front of the shul, it can have a more positive impact. Of course, every rav in his community has to weigh the pros and cons. But since the previous rabbi allowed it, if I were the new rabbi, I would maintain this young man's, quote, chazaka, unless the rabbi comes to a conclusion that it absolutely disturbs everyone else's davening, then the new rabbi has a responsibility to rule as he sees it. Maybe the first rabbi saw it differently. But in principle, my first responsibility would leave him to do what the previous rabbi allowed him to do. And to the contrary, maybe having a more positive impact as opposed to a negative one. 3, he has been receiving aliyahs and has even read his maftis since his bar mitzvah. It is distorted. If one listens closely, one can usually tell how the word fits his pronunciation. Without a sharp ear, it is often hard to make out. What is the getter? Needless to say, it's a very sensitive issue. Absolutely. It seems to me we have a right to be lenient. The mafter, we'll call it a chovas hatzibur. It's not like kriyas ha-megillah. The minigas and the namoretz, as we said before, even gets aliyahs to the Torah, even though he often mumbles and swallows words. Here is a shas hatzchak godol. I believe in such a case, he should arrange to see to it that those who are standing or sitting near the bima should move a little bit closer and focus a little bit better and listen with a sharp ear, at least if there are 10 people in that category. So the Birchas HaTorah is said more properly. So too with the Brachas and the Haftorah. And as far as the Haftorah itself, we already said earlier, is more room to be lenient, because not being most anyone, everyone says by himself in any event. Here's a Shas HaTzchak, as I said before. And I believe that the rabbi should point out the mysterious nefesh of this individual as a role model for others to follow. Again, all depends upon the Rav's evaluation of the pros and the cons. But it seems to me that it may be in the questioner's mind a significant problem. Maybe so. But I believe it's also a significant opportunity to raise the mispalim and the shul to a higher level of avodas Hashem if this is what they see. Thank you very much for listening.
I want to thank Rebbe for joining us on the call today, and Bezrat Hashem to invite Rebbe back. Mr. Hashem, if there'll be some, it'll be shrouds in 2 weeks from today.
Again, if people are willing to listen, believe that, I will try to speak.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Trevor,
bye-bye.
Thank you for taking, being on the call. Bye-bye.